thinking that buying the software, you're gonna all of a sudden have sales, is like thinking that, like, why do I not have a shed even though I bought a toolbox from Home Depot? I mean, like, the toolbox is not gonna use itself, right? Like, it might be a nice toolbox, it might have all the right tools, but you gotta find out which tool to apply where, and who's gonna apply it, and who's gonna do it, and what materials do I need in order to actually come up with some sort of results. You can have the tools and you can have the fancy documentation, but if you're not factoring in the human element, then you're not really doing anything. I would recommend that. There has to be a meeting to discuss whatever it is that the process revolves around, and it has to be done on somewhat of a regular basis.
You're listening to Contract Revolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Mustafa, welcome to the show, my friend. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We've got a pretty jam-packed session. I was reviewing your YouTube TED Talk, which had a million views on it, all around building out and installing process. And I'm super stoked to get into this with you. But I'm curious, before we even do that, you're the president of Push Analytics, which from my understanding is a marketing agency, analytics agency. You can let me know. But how'd you get into that? And how did you end up doing this talk on process, which actually was really cool. I thought it was the perfect thing for our audience. So
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd say we're more than just a marketing agency. You know, we're a full-service digital agency, really helping people. And also we do, you know, consulting as well. But it did flow organically because we did start off as like a growth agency. And, you know, we found pretty quickly that a big part of growth is process, right? So just they're kind of one and the same as far as we're concerned. So
you have a framework. We'll get into it in a little bit. But where did this framework even come from?
Experience. You're talking about the one to talk. So it took me a while to distill it down to a very easy to follow, like, kind of a framework, especially for the purposes of the talk. But yeah, just it's all based on our experience and actually, you know, helping people improve their processes.
This is where everybody's screwing up all the time. I'm constantly fixing these things, and this is the steps to do it right.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'm curious to know, like, just high level before we get into it all, but what is the difference between a business process that somebody builds up for their company that does fairly well, people, and, you know, take it on, it becomes a big part of their day-to-day, and operationally the staff are using it, and something that looks great on paper but doesn't actually go anywhere and dies out? Like, what's the big difference for people there?
There's a big, whenever you're building out processes, you gotta, the way I tell people is, like, you got to consider like a triangle of things, right? So you got to consider like what you need to accomplish, what the business needs to do, you know, all that stuff. The tools they're going to be using. And the third and very important piece of it is the people who are going to be the operating that process, for lack of a better word, right? So the people in it, the sales reps, the service reps, whoever it is that's going to be actually working that process. And a lot of times people will fail to consider one or more, but, you know, I think the people part is very, very frequently failed to be considered. You know, people will build something and it's on paper, it's great, but like people are like, dude, have you actually tried to use this? Like, do you know what we do? Like, you know, that none of this works. And then they either say that or they say it in themselves and they kind of just move on and don't do it, don't use it.
They're not bought in, they don't see the reason for it. And is it that it's just not practical, or is it usually just that people aren't bought in, or is it all of the above, or what is it?
Yeah, it's a combination. I mean, it is a balance. And with a lot of this stuff, it's an art, not an exact science. So, you know, part of it is, yes, you want to make sure that it tailors to some degree to the perspective of, you know, whoever people are using it. But at the other end, you know, I mean, let's just say you had a sales rep and their whole thing is like, everything's fine the way it is. I don't want to change anything. So you're not going to tailor to that because you do want to build out something, right? So there's a balance of like, hey, like, you know, this is obviously better, but we'll also account for some of your pain points and concerns to make sure that it's usable. And then buy-in is the other part of it. So yes, the other part is like, once you've tailored to the extent you can, where you've accounted for the different operators and balancing between like the stakeholder needs, then you actually got to get buy-in and training to people like, hey, like, this is what we're doing. This is why it's good. This is why it's useful for you. And that a lot of times also people, I'd say really don't do that. So I'd say it's actually both. It's the process itself did not even account for, you know, the perspective of the people who are actually going to be using it. And it's just kind of like a thirst there. And that's like, you know, again, I'm not saying that do everything based on the perspective of people. That's not it either. But it just didn't account for it at all. And there was no buy-in. So. Yeah.
Now, there's so much we could talk to about in this. There's two areas that I thought we could narrow in a little bit. One is just around the idea of putting a CRM or project management software in place into an organization and getting people to use it. I work with a lot of the project management softwares in our industry, and I go to their offices and I talk to their customer success teams, and the biggest feedback they have is people buy our software thinking it is the process, and then they try and install it and it doesn't, like, they don't actually know what they're doing, and so the business doesn't revolve around this at all, and it's a big old mismatch, and then they retention and the, you know, anyways.
Dude, this is yes. I was actually just on another podcast and I mentioned that exact point, because they were like, was a common misconception, or people, I was like, yeah, people will, they'll get sold on the features and they'll think, then they'll be like, oh, my sales aren't up. What did you think was going to happen? Then you're going to like put your credit card and all of a sudden you're going to get sales? I mean, it doesn't work that way, right? Like, yeah.
And we buy more and more software, and we've got this weird, crazy software stack that nobody knows how to properly use. And now we're trying to get them to use AI, and we're like, just use it. This is Claude. Try and make it good. But there's no definition around it.
Yeah, even with AI, even all of it, like we use a lot of AI, but it's like you need to know. Even AI is a tool, right? I mean, it could do a lot, but it's still a tool. And you need to know where to plug in your tools, right? Like, just because you have a tool doesn't mean... What I tell people, especially, you know, I'm a construction guy, and, you know, it's like thinking that buying the software, you're going to all of a sudden have sales. It's like thinking that, like, why do I not have a shed even though I bought a toolbox from Home Depot? I mean, like, the toolbox is not going to use itself, right? Like, it might be a nice toolbox, it might have all the right tools, but you gotta find out which tool to apply where, and who's gonna apply it, and who's gonna do it, and what materials do I need in order to actually come up with some sort of result. So it can definitely help you get there, but there's work to be done for that to happen.
Yeah, it's kind of like, if I'm going to go build a house, I can have all the tools to go build the house, but I still have to know how to build the house and what the steps are going to be along the way to make sure this thing actually gets built.
And you have to have blueprints. You have to have a plan. So it's like, yeah, you got to be able to like actually look at the blueprints and be like, what are we doing? And people understand that when it comes to physical things, but it's the same thing with software, right? It's just a digital version of the physical thing. So it's, if you... You don't just go in and buy like a massive software, like a CRM, without having some sort of plan of attack of like, okay, what are we going to do when we have it, right? So that's where that blueprint that comes in. That's where like kind of mapping out your process and all that stuff that we talk about comes into effect.
So let's get into it. You have this thing called the Optimize framework. Let's maybe just define it a little bit so we understand it. And let's piece by piece go through it and actually bring this in context to implementing, say, a CRM system for our sales teams to use regularly within a contracting business.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, we put together this framework, and this was the talk where, you know, you have the different steps that you would incorporate into the to be able to actually build a good process. So it's the process of building out a process. So without going into like each individual wording definition, but the general idea is, in order to first start, the first step that you want to do is you need to be able to look at where you're at right now. So you need to observe where you're at, you know, right now, and see like, hey, where, what's happening, what's currently working, what's not working, what do we need to improve, all that good stuff. You gotta look at it from right now, where do we start? And one thing I'll tell people when I'm talking to them and doing consults is like, look, you just tell me what you're doing right now, even if what you're doing is we scribble stuff on a napkin and we hand it to each other, and you know, and that's how we, you know, process quotes or whatever. That's fine. And there's no wrong answer. It's not like trying to tell somebody you're doing it bad or whatever. It just, we need to know where we're starting from, right? And you can think of this in your life. If you're getting in your car and the first thing you want to do is like, where you are, right? So you kind of, you're already alert of where you are. You either put that on your phone. Now, obviously, it knows that, you know, your location. But before, you know, you'd have to put it in on a MapQuest or whatever. But you say like, okay, here's where I am. And then the next thing is like, well, where am I trying to go? Right. So that's the same thing. That's the step after, you know, kind of looking at thing, which is picture. You got to picture, where am I trying to actually go with my business? Same thing. Got to get in your car. You don't just start driving. Nobody ever gets in their car and just like, all right, we're going on vacation. I'm going to start driving. I mean, like, where? Like, right. Where am I going? Like, right. So you got to figure out, where are you going? So that's, you know, hey, we would like to see ourselves, you know, having, you know, much smoother operations, we'd like to get our costs down for managing this thing. In the talk, I give the example of the assembly line. So people can go look at that. But you know, what were they looking at? Well, they wanted to get costs down for cars to a certain amount, and built at a certain speed, right? So that they can be able to like do it at mass scale. So that's the second part of it. And then after that, it's like, okay, now then you can start basically mapping out how you're going to get there. So that's the T, which is the tailoring. So those are kind of like the beginning part. So the beginning part of the optimized framework is really assessment, right? We can group that all into assessment and go on, but I don't want to go through the whole thing.
Yeah, it's all good. I'm going to back you up a bit. I'm going to go through this properly. So step by step.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We start with this observe piece. And then the thing I think about is, like, as an owner, I've got my own bias opinion of what I observe. I've got my own lens at which I see things through. And so am I just going through my own organization and being like, I can see that our sales process sucks. And when I delegate it out to my team, our closing ratios are down from what they used to be. And I've got all these opinions about what needs to be fixed. Am I just leading this in my own way? How am I getting the insights and involvement of those involved, the other people in the company? Like, how much is this just about me as an owner making decisions on my observations?
Yeah, I usually, if it's, okay, the problem you mentioned at the beginning early on where, like, there's no buy-in or people aren't using the process, if you end up, hey, I'm just going to be an owner, I'm going to just make decisions, I'm not going to consult anybody, you will probably end up with that problem, okay? So that is a part of it for sure, but it's not only, like, a good process is taking into account kind of two things: what the business, like, needs to accomplish, and then also, like, the people that are working on it, like, what they need to feel while they're doing it, or, like, the things they need to do while they're doing it, and also, like, the customer side as well, like, right? So, like, you also have to work within the constraints of, you know, the mark, like, if people are expecting to buy something online and you're like, okay, but online is, yeah, hypothetically, like, just online is, like, too complicated for our business to fulfill, so we don't want to sell online at all. Well, that's not a good solution. Like, the whole physics behind the business, like, you still have to follow, right? So part of it is that, I mean, like, right, observing, but I would also kind of go and, like, talk to people, right? So let's just say you're trying to solve for, like, sales, like, hey, why are sales so inefficient? Like, you know, we seem to quote, like, the quotes take us forever to put out. We're quoting so many jobs that we're not winning. What's happening? So, okay, you're going to start. You can look at whatever numbers or whatever information you might have if you have anything. But I would also go talk to the people, like, dude, like, yeah, why are you quoting so much? Like, what's going on? Let me see some of those quotes. Like, right? Like, hey, what's happening here? Like, are we just high? Like, you know, like, pricing wise, is our pricing high? Are we, you know, are we quoting the wrong people? Who are we quoting? Like, I actually start and almost investigate and ask questions to the people who are actually part of whatever process you're trying to optimize.
Right. So it's still ultimately up to me as the owner, but I'm going to go and talk to all the stakeholders and just say, hey.
Yeah, that's why. That's why the first step is not about decisions. That's why it's called observe. It's just, you're literally observing. You got to observe. And that, obviously, like, observe, you want to interrogate, whatever you want to do. Like, but, like, it's like, you need to take in, you need to input. You can't make a decision yet. It's not the decision phase yet. The decision comes when you're actually mapping stuff out. That's fine. You know, you as the owner could do that or whatever. But before that, you really need to go in and be like, okay, what is happening right now? And there's no opinions in that. It's more so getting to the bottom of, like, what is actually happening? Like, right? It's a very relatively objective thing, I would say. Some people take it subjectively, which is not good, right? So some people are like, oh, like, yeah, I'm the owner, I know what's happening. Like, yeah, this is why.
Yeah.
Like, I'll tell you, like, yeah, all sales are down. It's just because that one customer sucks. Like, and it's like, okay, like, that's fine. That's what you think. That's what you feel. But, like, that may or may not necessarily be true. You need to actually go and figure it out, right? It could be true, but you can't operate it that way, right? You have to know for sure what's actually happening.
Hey, you said something important, which is just, like, objectively observing. Which is hard to do sometimes when you go into an issue that you're like, hey, this is costing us $1 million a year in lost sales. I mean, I've seen this before. We went through 2008 and our sales ratio dropped from, I think it was like 40% down to like 28%. And I was like, hey, maybe this is just the market, but there is something internally going on where we've become quite lazy. And I've got some thoughts and ideas that I want to go fix right now. And so it was hard for me to, like, step back and actually think, is my opinion right? It might be. But it has to be proven first through objective truth, which is usually more than just my own, like, seething opinion as an entrepreneur.
Yeah. And I mean, like, there's obviously something to be said for, like, gut. And I think all entrepreneurs know that, like, gut plays a role, like, right, into things. And that's fine. And I think when you get later on in the process of making a process, then at some point, you know, you're not going to get everything perfect and you're going to have to, like, kind of just make a decision on something. And that's fine. But it just, especially the first step early on, it's like, I have my initial hypothesis. Like, just give yourself some time to, like, okay, your example is great, right? Are we really actually screwing up, or is it the market or whatever? I think worse growing up, but let me go find out. Like, right? Then you go talk to people, and then maybe you talk to people. You're like, actually, we're actually doing pretty good. Actually, people, it turns out that they're down more than we are. So, you know, we're actually like weathering the storm like quite a bit. You know, and maybe we shouldn't change anything, right? So that could be, you know, but yeah.
I've seen that before too. And actually, we've done that at BTA where we've over-systemized things and overcomplicated things because we're trying to solve problems and we add more things or tools to the problem and it only makes it
Yeah.
worse. But okay, so
Absolutely.
first step is observe. So I'm just objectively observing with my staff, with my customer, with my company, with myself, what is going on? What's the good, bad, and the ugly? And just trying to really understand it for what it truly is and keep my, you know, my, I guess, bias opinion out of it, but still allow me, the entrepreneur, to make the final call. Okay. You said picture was next. So now I'm building a bit of a vision of where we want to go. What's involved in this? What's a good version of this, a bad version of this? Tell me a bit about
Yeah,
picture.
and picture that's kind of where I would say you as an entrepreneur, now it's like, okay, let's say I'm consulting with you. I'm like, okay, what are you trying to accomplish right now? Like, right? Maybe you're like, oh, hey, like, I'd love to, you know, quote more jobs. Or I'd love like for our operations to be a little bit more efficient. Or, you know, I'd love for the ops guys to not be so stressed out so that we can actually handle a couple more customers. Right. So that's like kind of like defining the vision of where you want to be. Right. So that is going to be, I would say, probably more owner centric in this scenario. Right. Because you probably already have an idea of like, this is what I would love to be doing. But again, you could also incorporate other people's like, hey, like I talked to my head of ops and he would love like, you know, that he has a little bit more heads up when it comes to onboarding people or to, you know, starting a project or whatever, right? Like he has a little bit more heads up and he would love more time to plan, right? For example. So you could incorporate that in. So again, that could be driven by the entrepreneur, but it would also go down and incorporate to the people like, you know, what does that take from their end to accomplish this or how can we help them, you know, on that end as well?
Yeah, so it'd be like, you know, in doing this, I think I would love to see our closing ratios go up by 10%. I would love to see our sales to production handoff be smoother. I would love to make sure that every lead we get in is communicated within 24 hours and our brand is elevated as an overall customer experience, right from lead all the way to invoice. And it's like starting to write some of that out. And it involves, I guess, KPIs. It involves like a picture of what it looks like and involves all the parties involved. Is that fair to say?
No, some of the stuff you gave was very specific, which is good. Like it's like I love to answer leads within 24 hours. It's a very specific place that we picture ourselves being, and that's good. Yeah, absolutely.
Someone would probably yell at me and tell me we got to get back to them now within 5 minutes.
I mean, whatever. It's just an example, right? And it depends on the business and what replying actually entails and stuff like that. But yeah, for sure.
But it's specific, eh? It's yeah. That's one thing I just want to point out too is I think people can just say the vision is to make our sales process better, but what does better mean? And actually, one thing I've even realized, this is a little bit different than building out process, but we've did this in building software. Man, like when you try and say something like this cake is a yellow cake with green candles on it, everybody pictures a different cake. And so if you're too vague and you don't give enough specifics on what you're really trying to achieve, everyone else can think about what they're going to go build and it can be a completely different version of that same description.
Absolutely. Yeah. And being specific is hard, by the way, because a lot of times it's like, you know, you just take shortcuts and it's like, yeah, maybe I come to this one. Like, what do you want to do? I want to grow sales. Cool. So does everybody else. Like, right. Like, that's not really a plan, right? Like, you know, that's just like, okay, like a nice to have. What does that actually mean? Like, what are we looking at exactly? Because you do got to focus in. And a lot of times as entrepreneurs, you know, and we all do this, like, it's like you think and you're like, okay, you almost think that by focusing that you're leaving stuff on the table because you're compromising the other stuff, but it's not true. It's like a fallacy. Like, so, you know, if you're talking to somebody and you're like, okay, like what niche do you want to focus on or what niche are you focused on or whatever? And they almost think that like by focusing on a niche, that means that they're like kind of leaving out all this other stuff that they could also be doing and making more money and whatever. But they're not like mutually exclusive things. Like you could focus for the purposes of this conversation, for the purposes of building this process, and then you can still be broad in other things, right? Like it's not, you know, but I think a lot of times it's like entrepreneurs are wired to think that way. So that's just something to kind of like watch out for.
I also find for myself, I have a vision in my head, and because it's so clear for me, I skip on writing that out the details because it's just I'm connecting the dots in my head. Do you know what I mean by that? I'm kind of like, yeah, like
Right.
I generally can see what better looks like. So when I say it verbally, I have this vision of it, but I forget that nobody else can climb into my brain and see what I'm seeing.
I've done that before too with things like, you know, trying to get a content creator or whatever, and it's like, okay, like Oh, well, like, why do you not get it yet? I think it's, I was talking to somebody else, and he had the same problem. And I think it's an entrepreneur thing. I think it really is. It's like, okay, you have to work at 1,000,000 miles a minute. So it's like, you know, you kind of assume that everybody else is, but they're not, and they don't know what's in your head, and it's not fair to them. So it's like, you got to kind of take a step back and actually, like, that's why forcing yourself to be specific actually really helps. I mean, actually doing the TED talk was a good experience in that, because it was like, they're really, you know, it's like their whole format, right? They 15 minutes. Right? They want you to be at 15 minutes. Like, they start freaking out if you get to like 16 minutes. They're right. freaking out.
You
like,
get the big
you
know, hug.
You really got to get off the stage. Like, right? So it's like, so it, people have to like really practice their, what they're trying to say to get it to 15 minutes. So I, you know, like I, like my presentation, I took it and I threw it in the garbage a couple times. Like, I just started over. Like, right. Like I know what I wanted to say, but I really had to condense it and bring it down and, like, you know, like really focus on being very, very specific with every word. You know, because you also don't want to be looking at a piece of paper or something either. So yeah, like really have to be specific where every word is specific. And it's not that easy, right? Like, remember how, I don't know, it's a tribute to who, like Benjamin Franklin or something, but it's like, you know, sorry, my letter is too long because I didn't have time to write it shorter. You know, it's like an irony, like writing shorter and more specific actually takes more time.
It's interesting to what we're talking about, because I talk a lot about this in like strategic planning for the entire company, but we're talking about just like a specific process within a company. We're still taking that same methodology and saying, let's, you know, let's go out and observe what's really going on and let's build a vision for this one element of the entire company and be that intentional about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you have to work somewhere. Even if you're revamping all your processes, which you can and should, you know, at some point, like, right, any business should, but you still have to focus at a given point, at a given moment, right? Like, so it's like, all right now we're going to focus on sales. Okay, and then we're going to go to ops. Like, right, there's a certain context that you have to have when you're doing a task. So
let's talk a bit about Taylor. So this is the next step. So I've kind of defined my vision for it. I've observed what needs to be observed. Now I'm starting to, I guess, is it like drop a rough draft of what this is going to look like? Or what exactly does this mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, like that tends to take a lot of time, especially when we're doing it, working with other companies, or like, you know, okay, like let's map out what we think that's going to look like. And then you can look at it and we can make some tweaks, but basically laying everything out, right? But actually drawing out the map. We like to process map a lot. You could write it out however way you want, but putting it all in front of you on paper somewhere where it's like, okay, I could see what this is going to look like. Like, okay, like here's the first step that we're going to have. Here's the second step. Here's whatever. And I would recommend spending some time here, because this really helps things kind of work later. A lot of times what we'll see, like, for example, we'll come into people's like CRMs and they've been set up from before, whatever. And then they're like, what are all these automations? And we wouldn't know. What is this? Can we turn it on or off? We don't know. Like, is it even working? We don't know. Like, who set it up? Some guy set it up like years ago and he's not with us. And we don't know what, like, do you need it? Like, we don't know. Like, it's like, they don't know anything because there's nothing really mapped out anywhere. There's no guide. And it was just like something set up and forgotten. And that's it, right? And it's like, becomes very hard to do anything, you know, and very hard to use a tool, and then people just end up with a tool that they're not using. So so that part really helps with that, because especially if you built it, you know, if you built it from a map, just like in construction, you usually do build something from blueprints, but if you built it from blueprints, well, it's kind of easy to find out what you built. You can just go back to the blueprints and be like, oh, there was supposed to be a wire there. Oh, there's a pipe behind this wall. Oh, okay. Like, you know, and you just, that's it. It's, you don't have to guess. You don't have to like remember anything. You don't have to call Joe like 5 years later and be like, Joe, where'd you put the pipe? Like, it's just all there. It's the same thing here, right? If you put a map together first and then you built it from the map, you will know when you forget what something was. You'll just go back to the back and be like, oh, that's what we're supposed to do. Okay, I got it. We know how to fix it.
Specific to designing workflow or sales process in a CRM, how often do you have to just throw away everything that people have created in the past and start from scratch? Because I do find it is a bit, even for us, we use Zoho, it's a bit of a rat's nest. And it's like 10 year ago developer that worked on it, you know, to this year. And now we have an internal person. But I'm like, at some point, I'm like, man, I just wish we could throw all this away, look at even a completely fresh system if we need to, and start from scratch. Is that, when should you do that? When should you not?
That is a viable solution, and sometimes we do recommend that. Yeah, I mean, I'm even in personal life, like I am a believer in doing that. I mean, giving the example of the talk, like I spent time on a track for a while, and I'm like, no, this is not it. Like, I'm throwing the whole thing out, like, right, and just start over, because it's like, and that kind of like almost forces your brain to reset too. Now, obviously, with business, you want to do that with some consideration, right? So, what starting over you know, may not may mean different things depending on where you're at and how much you're using it. We advise on that. So for example, it might be like, okay, look, we're gonna sometimes people have like all these duplicates in their databases and all this like messy database where they're like, we just want to start over. I'm like, that's fine. Let's make sure we archive everything first. You know, you have a copy somewhere, like, right? We'll maybe make a like a sub list of only the deals and the contacts that are active right now, like right people with active stuff, because we don't want to like necessarily completely wipe the board. If there's something active, like we want to keep it on there, and then we'll start over for the new stuff, right? So so there's stuff like that, right? It's a kind of balancing out. Or sometimes it's like, hey, we're gonna have a cutoff date. Anything that was before I don't know, February of 2026, we're gonna just archive it. Anything after that, we'll actually put, you know, in our new system, right? So that way it's like, okay, it gives us some history, but then we also can like kind of clear our minds, right? We a lot of times that ends up being a good play because people also get overwhelmed. It's like if your system is so messy and everything is like so junk that like you're gonna sit there and be like, oh man, I have to revamp every single contact to fit the new system and add their information and whatever. And then it's like, then you're just not gonna do anything. Like, so you gotta just like, you gotta rip off the bandaid at some point.
One thing, as you're talking, I'm just thinking about something that's come up with our members a lot, and actually me, which is like every software I've ever used is like, even the best selection after doing a ton of research is like 80% good for what my vision actually is. And is 20% has these weird things that it just can't do what I want it to do. And so actually a lot of times the mess comes from me forcing it and being like, I'm going to create this API and this custom thing and this unique paper process for Sally to do on a Friday, whatever it is, right? And now I've created this complicated thing just to get it to be my way. Especially in the space of as purchasing monthly subscription software, how much should we be fighting to make it that vision we created versus to succumb to the way it's been designed to be used?
I think that Taylor step would actually help you answer that question, because when you map things out and you start seeing how all the pieces are fitting together, like we did that before where we mapped out like, you know, what the process was and how we're going to tweak it and stuff like that. And I remember the CTO for that company actually texted me after and he was like, thank you for helping us understand what we're doing better than, you know, even we understood it, right? Because now they saw it all and they're like, oh, that fits there. Oh, you know what? We don't really need notification here. Actually, we do need a notification here. Oh, we need more reminders here. So everything's like laid out, and now it becomes very clear. Like, you know, when you're in it, when you're like actually working the process, it's not, you're kind of like just grinding at it, right? It's like you're in your car at a traffic light, right? You're looking at the traffic light. You're not zoomed out in your head and like, you know, understanding the interstate highway system and like how it links to each other. You're able to see that from your car looking at a traffic light. But if you sit there and look at Google Maps, you will see that, right? Like if you actually sit there and plan it out and like, okay, where am I going? Like what's happening, right? So it's the same thing. When you're able to zoom out and see, and that's why I'll tell people be like, okay, hey, we have the CRM or HubSpot, or whatever CRM. It's like, hey, they have this feature. They have this feature. What about this feature? What about this? I'm like, listen, hold up for the features. Like, we're going to get to
all the plugins, though, Mustafa. They're all the plugins. Yeah, yeah.
We're going to get to the features. I think these companies are adding features like a million a minute now. So it's like people get overwhelmed with the features. And it's like, guys, we'll get to the features. First, let's find out what we need. And then we'll tell you what features that you need to actually make it work. Right. And that's really the way that I recommend going about it. Because now you're going from like a needs first approach, you know, and then you can kind of see for yourself, like, you know what, I don't really need that API, or actually I do need that API. That's like, that's like the whole project, right? Like, you know what? I'm going to die on the hill of that API now, because I can see that it's very important. It might be either or, but I think you'll know when you actually do that. That's why that's really important.
This kind of goes along with this, but how do you do this? Because how do you determine what looks good on paper versus what's practically actually going to be used in the field? Like, how much should I be building this thing to the nth degree before I ever show it to anybody versus kind of building it as we go?
You don't want to overbuild, and you don't want to underbuild. And it is an art. Again, that's part of the art part. Like, right, because people sometimes think a better process means like I built more layers into it. I have more tools. You know, I have more fancy diagrams. I have a longer document. That is not true. And I'm not saying that. You also don't want to like underbuild and be like, okay, we're going to just not have a process, which, I mean, everybody has a process, right? It's just a philosophical thing that like everybody has a diet, right? So it just, that means they just don't care about it. So, but we're going to have like basically nothing right now. So you don't want to overbuild for sure. I think the way to realize that you don't need to overbuild is to understand that it's not a one and done. This isn't like, you know, somebody that's like, I don't know, I mean, like people like, maybe like building a house or something, and they're like, okay, I want to build this house and I want to live in it. I mean, nobody really does that anymore, but let's just say, like, great, I want to build this house and I want to live in it. And, this is like my dream house, forever house, whatever. So I want to make sure I have this. And what about this? And what about, well, we're going to have a kid later. So, like, I want to add an extra room here. And what about, like, when my parents get older and, like, they want to come in and we have to have a guest room, we have to do this. Because, like, okay, like, you're trying to put everything, you're trying to really figure out everything in that space because you don't want to ever do this again. That's not the case here. Like, right? It's like, it's a living thing, right? So it's like, okay, like, you actually sometimes that is detrimental. Like, there's somebody, we're kind of, I'm kind of helping consulting also, a friend of mine, and it was like, he's building out processes, whatever, which is great. But some of the stuff is like really like, I'm like, dude, you're not like a 300 employee company yet. I mean, I know you want to be that, but also you don't want to overbuild to that point, because if you overbuild to the 300 employee company, we're a 10 employee company. You're not even gonna get to become a 300 employee company, because you're gonna like just collapse under the weight of things that you don't need right now. Like, it's actually not like the difference, what that company needs and what this company needs are not the same thing. So you're not even, you can't, you shouldn't, and you don't want to do that. So it's definitely balancing that out is huge.
Yeah, I call it like maybe like minimum viable product. It's kind of like I've got my vision, and then I've got what we're actually going to release to the team, which is not everything in that vision day one. We kind of need to get to the minimum viable element of it, where every part of the process and workflow is in, and then we can add features and benefits to it as we see improve ourselves through the year. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and that's why, yeah, if you have like a living map, that makes it easy. So if you've mapped it out and then you're like, all right, this is what we built. We're building a couple of new things for sales. Okay. And then later you're like, I want to, okay, it's going good. Sales is looking good. I want to add more stuff. Let me pull up the map and let me see. Oh, okay, I can add this here. I can add this here. And then maybe you start making like a different color or whatever, or like, different font, and just show like, okay, this is what I'm proposing to add. And then, you add it, and then you come back and you have the map, right? So, it makes it so easy to refer back to. Like, even for us, like, we work on so many different companies, so many different projects. Sometimes, like, I don't, I gotta go back to, talk to somebody about something we did a while ago. I pull up the map that I did, and I'm like, oh, okay, I remember now. Like, yeah, it was like 2 years ago, but I remember now. Like, I remember what we were doing. Like, it's very, it makes it so much easier. If I didn't have that, I wouldn't remember either. Like, I don't know. I don't know what we did 2 years ago, but talked to like dozens of companies since, right? Great. So, yeah.
When it comes to this, like we're talking a lot about software right now. When it comes to software, it can get a bit tunnel vision on like the features and the benefits and the workflow and everything like clicking around in this thing in my computer. What else am I doing in Taylor that has nothing to do with the software? Am I building my SOPs right now or am I not? Am I building out the training manual to get people to use it? But like, what else am I doing in Taylor, or am I just thinking through the workflow?
No, I mean, in the Taylor step. So, like, really, after you do want to think through, like, you're gonna start thinking through like what features you're gonna need. It's gonna like kind of become more visual. I mean, the step after that is implementing, right? So then, when you're implementing, then you're really diving into the software and actually configuring it and actually like lining stuff up and stuff like that. And you kind of document SOPs. You could do it in Taylor. You could do it a little bit later. That's fine. But yeah, you definitely want to be able to. I think the Taylor step is going to help you start identifying what features are going to need for software, and what are my people going to be doing within the process, right? And then starting to think things from their perspective as well.
Have I even picked a software solution at this point, or am I still
I
just
mean,
going?
usually, like in practice, like usually we know we're going to use something, like, right? We just not. I just don't go into the weeds of the features until this point, right? Like, that's all. Like, that's what I was saying. Like, yeah, like, right, people will come to us like we're a HubSpot partner, and people will be like they know they want to use HubSpot, and like, that's fine, and we're okay with them using HubSpot, obviously. But like, it's just like, okay, like, let's not talk about like the individual nuanced features of like, this automatic email or this thing or whatever, until we actually know what do we need to do? What are we trying to do first? So, that's really where that comes in.
Okay. So yeah, we're kind of holding off on naming names yet, or labeling products and services we're using. We're just kind of thinking through the workflow of it. We're thinking through what is practical, and then we're going to go down and in next stages is implement or build it out. Give us a bit some insight on how we do this correctly.
Yeah, so I mean, the implementing is is kind of what you would expect, right? So you're gonna build out what you have a map already. You already know what you're trying to do. So implementing should actually be easy. Implementing is not the hardest step, believe it or not. Like, when we do this stuff, it's like people will sometimes like be thinking, like I'll be talking to people about the scope, like our scope or whatever, and they're like, oh, like this, and I'm like, like the implementing part is easy. Like that's not hard at all. It's actually getting to the point where everything's clean to be implemented, right? Like having that clean process, but factoring in everything, interviewing all the stakeholders, making sure everybody like actually, was factored into whatever we're building out. That's really what's harder. So, the implementing is kind of what you would expect.
And can we talk about this for a second? Because like what, just visually, how much work goes into all the things we just talked about before you start implementation? Like if it's a percent of overall like time.
Oh, as a percent, because I'll say, like, how much work, it just depends. I mean, by the way, like, some of these things could, like, sometimes, like, the solution is quick, right? So, for example, like, let's just say you have, like, an issue with, I don't know, you can't keep track of quotes or something. And maybe you're, like, not that big. So, you're like, okay, maybe you whip up a solution. This is a quick, literal solution. Like, hey, we're going to do, okay, our issue is that we can't keep track of quotes. We don't have good reporting. Okay, we'd like to have better reporting and better visibility. Okay, so that's the second step. Okay, the third step, I'm gonna map it out and be like, okay, we're gonna have a meeting, we're gonna log stuff into a spreadsheet, and then we're gonna, talk about it in the meeting. Like, right, like this is like the map. And then okay, implement, I'm setting up a spreadsheet, and then the next steps where you actually like train the team or whatever. Guys, starting now, you have to come in every Monday morning so that we do a meeting, so we talk about our sales. That could be done in like 2 days, like right? So, or even a day. That's like an example of like a quick fix, like right? It's just like a one, two, three, and that is still a process, like right? And that is still, and sometimes that is actually the best process for that moment in time. So, even though it's not so fancy or whatever, but sometimes it's great, like that works great. It's actually a very good format that I tend to recommend a lot, especially in the sales context. Like we used to, because I worked in sales, construction sales, and our sales manager, he was very good. Like he had a very good intuition, which was great. Like I learned a lot from him. I still keep in touch with him. One of the things he did was we had a meeting every week. Like it didn't matter, people on the road, people running around. This was before like people generally worked remote. So it, like but as sales, like you did anyways. So people on the road, whatever, it didn't matter. But you had to come in Monday. Like Monday was like the non-negotiable day. You had to come in, and we had to have a meeting, and we had to talk. We went around and just talked about what everybody's doing, and that was it. Like right, like that was in, and it was like. In his, for him, it worked because he had a really good memory. So he was able to actually keep track of like what everybody's doing just based on that. Like, oh, okay, like you said you were doing this job last week. Did you close it? Like, hey, what happened? Like, hey, you said you were doing that. Like, 2 weeks ago, you said this. So he would actually keep track and like ask. And it worked because it was a good stopgap for like having a good stopgap is actually a very good way to keep your processes in check. Because like no matter what happened throughout the week, even if like, me and you were supposed to talk or collaborate on something and we forgot or we didn't or whatever, we got busy or whatever. We were forced to interact on Monday, right? So Monday, I'm gonna be like, I'm working on this job. Oh shoot, I'm working on it too. Like if my customer needs a bit too, and then okay, let's talk about it now. Okay, like let's talk about it now, or let's huddle for 5 minutes after the meeting. Now we're forced to do it. So it's like a nice stopgap, right? So that actually works pretty well.
This is also what I mean by like outside of the software, all the other things that need to be thought through, right? Like if I'm, running a sales team, I'm going to want to have the workflow put in there. I'm going to want to have certain KPIs that I want to measure, goal versus actuals for the team. I want to use those KPIs in a meaningful way. So you just mentioned having like a weekly meeting or something to hold accountability and rigor around the fact that we're hitting or missing goals and we're implementing any changes, right? And there's probably
Just
some
keep talking
document.
one sec. I gotta put on my charger,
Okay.
but you keep talking.
And then there's probably some documentation and some SOPs around the whole thing. So I've tailored up this process as I'm doing implementation. What are all the, is that kind of it? Is it like, what are the team meetings? What are the SOPs? What is the software we're using? Like, what are the things I need to be aware of? Because the thing I watch with all our contractors is like, I've got the software, it does the thing, I'm training my team, but there's nothing else around it that makes it real, that makes it a part of the company.
Yeah, I mean, and then that's it for sure. And that I think people miss that a lot. It's like, okay, you have that's what I said early. That human element in that triangle, I think, is the most missed side of the triangle. It's like you can have the tools and you can have the fancy documentation, but if you're not factoring in the human element, then you're not really doing anything. Like right, at the end of the day, like even systems of government, right? Like they'll tell you, like there's like a famous quote, like whatever, like all these countries have all these things, but like at the end of the day, like it's like if there's no enforcement mechanism, then it's just words on paper, like, right? Like it's you see that, right? Like so the same thing, like here, like if there's no real mechanism to actually do stuff, then it's just words on paper, right? Like you're not actually doing anything with it, like anything. So that's why I like having like some sort of cadence, in general, which forces the enforcement. That's like the easiest win for me, what I just told you with the meetings, right? It's easy. People can understand it. People can remember, like, okay, I got to show up every Monday. All right, whatever. Or but Google Meet, whatever. I'm not saying like you have to be in person, but that was just my example. But hey, every Monday we have to meet. Every 2 weeks even we have to meet. Whatever. Every month, whatever it is, like whatever makes sense for the business. But like, I would recommend that there has to be a meeting to discuss whatever it is that the process revolves around, and it has to be done on somewhat of a regular basis. Whether you want to do. Yeah, every week, every two, twice a week, whatever makes sense for the business, that's fine. Now, what I wouldn't do is I wouldn't do it too OD. Sometimes people get so excited and they're like, all right, fine, look, we're gonna be every day to talk about this. I'm like, okay, you're not. Like, you're gonna say that and you're gonna do it for like 2 days and you're not gonna do it again. And then it's the same problem. So, that's why I'll tell people, like, just do something manageable, like, whatever. It's every 2 weeks, that's fine. If you be every 2 weeks and you're actually forcing yourself, you'd be surprised how fast time goes by and you're like, oh, shoot. We still haven't considered this. Like, it's been 4 months and we did talk about this. Like that, like when so when you're taught, people like will like almost like overestimate time when they're planning out things ahead and underestimate time backwards. It's like a weird like dichotomy. So, if you tell somebody, sometimes tell business owners, like, dude, like, look, just have the sales team meet every month, every 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks, every month, that's crazy. That's so long, whatever. But then it's like, wait a minute, you have something that hasn't been addressed for 6 weeks, 7 weeks. Like, time flew like that. If we were meeting every 2 weeks, you actually would have caught it, right? Like, yeah, I think that's a big part of it. People will, have to misestimate that a little bit.
Yeah, the things I'm just listening to you say, but it's just kind of like, okay, if we're going to implement this, we need to have the software decided upon and used. We need to have probably some training, I would imagine, to teach everyone how to use this. We
Always,
need.
always. That's one of the steps. You always want to have training. You never not want to have training. That's like a huge mistake, by the way.
Yeah, so let me even talk about that a little more. Like, what is good training? What is bad training? I've seen it done both ways, right? I've seen training where it's like, great, we're launching this new thing, and everyone's like, great. And then they have a 1 hour meeting around it, and that's it. And it's like, what is good training for people to
I think you
actually
want to
get
try
to a point where
to
they can
give
use it?
buy-in, to also give people benefits that are for them and not just like there's a balance where like the company kind of wants to do this. But also, this is beneficial for you because of X and Y and Z, right? Like, okay, like, look, this is gonna make your life easier. Look, if you put this in and you go on vacation, the next person's gonna be able to pick up and not have to bother you about like what jobs you're recording because they can just see them and we can just have them, we just work without calling you, right? And kind of showing people the buy-in from like, this is beneficial for you, but also like, this is what we all wanna do. This is kind of what we're gonna do. So having that balance, I think, is like important. And making sure like they have the right information available so that they know how to use the system. Now there is a certain point with certain people, not everybody, where it's like you're gonna have to just kind of be like, okay, dude, like listen, we've done it, we've kind of accommodated things, but like we really need you to do this. Like just like that's it, right? Because it's also like, I mean, I worked in sales, and I like to say sales people are like tend to be process resistant in a sense. So like they kind of like I everything's in my head or whatever, and that's fine. By the way, a lot of times that is kind of true, but even if everything's in your head and you're like 90, 95% good, which is pretty good, but that means that 5% are things that you could maybe not have closed. And with how big tickets are in construction, that could be a lot of money actually. So yeah, that's a big part of it. Like really making sure you kind of have that. I think you were gonna say something.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about buy-in. I'm like, so we're doing this right now internally, but for like our assessment phase, which would be the equivalent of like the estimate side of, when you're doing a quote for a customer, the buy-in actually is really coming from having the people who actually do that part of the work be a big part of the build out and the actual like deciding factor of like, what are we actually building? What are we actually not? So it's kind of their ideas that we're putting in place more than they're just ours. I've got my head of sales, me, our sales ops person, and then our assessment people kind of all involved. And it's a bit more work up front, but we're gathering everyone's ideas. And there's kind of like an agreement after that of what we're doing. So when it comes to full circle to actually like training and implementing, they're like, yeah, this is the stuff that I wanted to have changed. I'm like, good. This is you coming to me now, not me coming to you. But I found like buy-in comes often before the end. It's kind of during that initial, like, I guess you'd call it like the tailoring phase to get it right.
Yeah. I mean, like, I would say yes. That's even early on when you were like, hey, if it's just like, just me, the owner, just deciding things, and that's, you kind of don't want to do that for that reason. Mm-hmm. Like, right. That's one of the reasons, actually. Like, okay, if you're just gonna be, you're deciding things, well, you're not going to have the buy-in. Like, you're just not, right? So, you know, and again, it's balancing, like, how much level of buy-in you get. Like, you're not, if you have a big sales team, like, let's say it's 20 salespeople, you're not going to sit there and get, like, the buy-in of all 20 salespeople. Like, you're not going to do that. But you may have, like, okay, I'm going to have, like, my more process-oriented salespeople sit on calls with us and, you know, and then kind of, like, buy into, like, what we're doing. And that's fine. Like, right, you may have, like, a little bit of, you know, sprinkled buy-in, let's just call it, in there, to kind of like help out. So, I would say, getting some critical level of buy-in definitely helps things move smoother. And then you also have champions, you know, for this. So if it's like, okay, it can't just be you, right? So like, somebody has a question, like, not everybody has to come to like you. Oh, okay, go to the salesperson who was involved in the build-out. Oh, like, hey, do you know how I can do this? Oh, yeah, just do this. Okay, and then it actually gives more chances for the thing to actually work out and it'll work.
So I just want to recap a bit, but it's like, we've taken some time to observe objectively what's going on. We then build a vivid vision or a picture of what great's going to look like and really gives it specifics. We then start to tailor out a bit of a roadmap without thinking of specific software or people's names or anything, but we're like tailoring out an objective roadmap of what this would look like. We then start to put it in place. We put in the right software, put in some training, put in some SOPs, put in some maybe meetings and rhythms around all this. And we're starting to instruct it into the team so that everyone's starting to use it. Once I've got that moving, is that it? You've got this kind of stage around like zoom out, evolve. Like what am I doing once it's in place?
I'll answer that. Although you want to correct something in the tailor, you would be looking at whatever software you're using at that stage. Okay. Like, okay, hey, we want to put this feature here. You can basically split the tailor into like two parts. First, like, let's come up with the map overall, what we want. And then like, let's start.
And then put in
okay, we need a reminder here, automation here. Like, you know, Sarah needs to like, you know, quarterback this, like whatever. Like, no, you would definitely, by the time you finish that stage, you would definitely have specific software stuff. Okay. Otherwise, what are you building, right? So that sure. Yeah, just to clear that up. Now, as far as, like the last thing I have from the E and optimize, the final one, is evolve, right? So you want to be able to like actually monitor everything, look at what's happening, look at the data, you know, because good process will yield some data. So you're going to come out and be like, okay, like, I'm able to, you know, track my sales a little better. Oh, I'm seeing that our sales went up, our sales went down, whatever, right? Like, and you want to monitor and observe, and then come back and be like, okay, like, what can we, what can we evolve? What do we need to improve? You know, so no, it's not it. It's supposed to be living. It's supposed to be a living thing. And I think the misconception that people think that it is it is what makes them so paralyzed to actually finish the project, is to actually use the thing, to actually get information, right? Because if you do think it is it, like in the house example I gave, then now you really have to sit there and analyze, paralyze yourself to come up with every single possible outcome and scenario and edge case, just jam it all in there so you can build it in this supposed dream house and, you know, never have to build anything again. But that's, you're not going to actually be able to effectively do that. Number one, number two, it's actually kind of productive to do that. And number three, it does need to evolve over time. You do need to, you know, sit there and like review and assess and people shouldn't be scared of that. But you know, if I took a sales team and it was like, you know, we had nothing at all, like we didn't even talk to each other, right? And people just were doing our own thing. And I got them to, everybody filled out stuff with something on a spreadsheet. And you know what? The spreadsheet maybe is 100% accurate, but it's like 80% accurate. That's a win. Like, right? Like that. Yeah. If you just go tell somebody, hey, our sales process is like, we have a spreadsheet and it's not 100% accurate, it's 80% accurate. That sounds, you might sound like, that sounds awful. But like, if you had nothing before, right, that's actually a huge win.
The arrow is
like,
pointing in the right direction.
Yeah, you're moving in the right direction, right? And that's huge, right? So, and then you do the next thing, right? So I'd rather do that than, okay, we built this fancy system with all this stuff, with all these layers and like three levels of integrations and all these APIs connect to each other and nobody uses it. So, I mean, like the spreadsheet guy is actually ahead. Right. The spreadsheet guy is actually ahead, right? So,
So let's talk about this evolve piece with our team for a second, because if I install a process, get them to use it, how do I make sure I still get a good feedback loop for us to improve on this? Not just based on my opinion. And also not like get into a place where it's just groupthink and we got a bit of everyone's opinion constantly trying to like change this thing to where it's like a monster of everyone's ideas. How do we just properly bring in innovation and evolve an existing process in a healthy way?
Yeah, cadence is always important. Cadence is always important for keeping your processes up to date and for also keeping, well, for keeping actually the enforcement of the process and for also that, keeping your process up to date. So I would say the cadence. So you could, I think any good process has cadence built in already. So like give the example of the sales, you know, we want to meet constantly to be able to discuss jobs, right? Like it could look differently. That's just an example I gave. Maybe you're meeting one-on-one with people. Maybe that's the cadence. Like I'm meeting one-on-one with each rep, whatever it is. I think there's some sort of cadence though. That's a backstop. And that, by the way, that's actually another way to make sure that people are actually using the tool. Because if let's say you have your cadence, you have your regular sales meeting, and your regular sales meeting is that you will pull up the CRM and you're going to be like, okay, let me go through each salesperson and let me see what you have in there. Even the people who aren't using it, eventually they're going to be forced to use it because they're going to be showing up to these meetings kind of like looking bad, like, right? Like, oh my God, like, I have nothing in there. Shoot, I gotta make sure I do it. Like, you know, and then eventually they're going to just do it, right? But if you don't do that, that might not happen. So I think that now you could almost have like a separate cadence. And again, you got to let it run its course too. Like, you know, like you don't build a process and then like 2 weeks later, be like, unless you have to, if you have to, that's fine. But like 2 weeks later, be like, all right, like let's just change everything now. Like, I mean, no, like you don't really do that either. Right. Right. So you give yourself like maybe monthly or every 2 months, like check in maybe with yourself, maybe with the team, maybe you kind of like ask him, like have these backstops and be like, okay, is there anything we need to tweak? Anything we need to improve? Maybe on whatever meeting you're doing, the sales meeting. Like, hey guys, like we picked up a lot more clients lately, so we've gotten a little bit bigger. Do you guys think we should change anything? Anything? Anybody seeing anything? Yeah, you know, I'm noticing that like sending quotes in 2 days, like it's too hard now, right? Because we have so many quotes to send, for example, like right. So, building into the cadence basically.
I'll say this too, especially with software. If you put that much work into something and you launch it to the team and they do actually start to use it. I've seen this where like everyone's afraid to go into the stuff that's not really working because it's like, well, we put a lot of work into building this out, so we have to use it now. Is there ever scenarios where you just realize like, you know what, we're boring a little bit of our hole in the wrong direction and we actually need to change trajectory? Because it's hard often when like the feedback from everybody's super subjective and I don't have data to measure of like, are we actually improving? Like did all this work actually make a difference for us? And how do you determine that? How often, like maybe just from your experience of doing this with your clients, but how often do you realize, hey, we actually have to take the bold move and like move in a different direction because we built it, but what is not actually serving us? Or does that not happen often? I don't know, when you do this right.
Yeah, I mean, it can happen, obviously, like, right? I mean, also things can like change. Like, you know, when you look at the world now, things change on a dime, right? Like, it's like, okay, like, you know, maybe one day you thought investing in this thing was great and then the next day it's not, and vice versa, right? So you need to be able to like adapt. I mean, as far as like knowing if it's working or not, I mean, honestly, like, I think being as close to, what you call it, the ground as possible, will help make that like kind of more clear. I mean, the first question usually is like, well, are people using it? Like, right, if we're talking about salespeople, like, are they using the tool? Right. Okay, they're not. So now how are we gonna use it? Guys, you really gotta use it. Like, guys, if it's not in, when we do our forecasts or whatever, if it's not in the tool, you're not gonna get credit for it or whatever. Like, right, the different orgs have different ways of doing it, right? But like, you're gonna get credit for it, or like, you know, I'm not gonna be able to forecast that, I'm not gonna be able to put it on, you know, a deal that you claimed or whatever, right? You some incentive, like, you really need to make sure you're using it. Once people are using it, then it's like we get to the next point. Now you can't kind of go and like be like, okay, nobody even tried to use it, therefore let's go in another direction. I mean, you did not let it run its course, mm-hmm. right? Now maybe people did try to use it and they actually did use it and they're like look, like it's just, you know, for some actual technical reason it doesn't make sense, then that's something to be entertained, right? But a lot of times, again, because people don't have that cadence, because people don't have that support system behind it, they might not even be at the point where they're using it properly or using it at all. And that is not really where you want to be making a decision. Like, let's move in the other direction. So, because presumably, if you had the, let's just call it for lack of a better word, the political will to embark on this process of making whatever process it was to begin with, then you should logically have the political will to enforce it being used till you can see it through, right? And if you don't, then just don't do it. Like, right? So don't. And sometimes you have this dichotomy where it's like, okay, like, especially working with a client, and it's like, you get to a point and it's like, you kind of like, I'm trying to tell them, like, listen, it's on you now to essentially, like, either, you know, you don't want to use the force, but like, mandate for your team to use this. I cannot mandate it for you. You know, I could tell you what you need to do and we can help you run these meetings or whatever, but you have to, it has to come from you. You have to tell the team, I am requiring you guys to use this, or we, the company or whatever, this is what we're going to be using. And, you know, it's not zero where sometimes people like almost like don't want to do that. It's like, wait, so why did you install this whole thing to begin with if you didn't have the will to do that? Like, right. So that's a little bit of a contradiction.
I just wrote something down while you were talking, but it's like almost like a hierarchy where I'm like, are they even using it? Which you just said. Then I'm like, do they objectively actually like it, or is it actually, do they feel like it's helping them? Right. And the final thing is, did it actually improve the KPI? Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like, let's first use it. Then we can actually just hear from the ground, like, do they feel like it's helping them? Doesn't mean it is, but let's actually, do they feel like it is? And then finally I'll be like, did the KPI actually go up or down? Did the number actually?
And those last two can go contradiction the other way too, because it could be like, I feel like this is a lot of work. And then it's like, well, but guys,
but the KPI looks great.
yeah. So is it? Yeah. And that's actually three really good things to kind of take together. Because if our KPIs are up and they feel like it's not good, and it's like, no, but it's up. Like, look, let me show you whatever, like, you know, and then you kind of get them excited. If they feel like it's not helping and the KPIs are down, then maybe they have a point, right? Yep. Like, so it's, yeah.
But they have to have used it to have an opinion.
Yes, for a
prolonged period of time.
That's like if somebody's like, you know, if it's like, I'm a sales leader and like I put it in, I would tell, like, don't complaining about it. Have you used it? I don't see. Let me open it up, dude. You have like one thing in, you haven't used it.
Yeah.
Don't come and complain about it when you haven't even used it. Like, use it first and then let me know.
Yeah, which is the big hurdle, actually. I think for a lot of this, like, we've talked a lot about the prep work to get to tailor and build out a really good process that we can be more confident. It can give us a higher, you know, percentage of success. But I think through all of this, like you said earlier, like the human or people element is the big thing that can make or break anything you put into your organization, whether it's a new CRM system, project management software, sales process, or something more benign and small within the company. It's like, are the people engaged in this entire thing?
Absolutely.
Any other advice for people just listening right now that have made it to this far into the podcast that are thinking like of putting some new stuff, new software, AI solutions?
I would say, just start with something. Right? I know that a lot of times people are like, oh, like I have to do all this stuff. Just start with one thing. Like, pick something, start with it. It could be simple, it could be small. You don't have to feel like you need to over-engineer it. Sometimes you do because the problem is that big, but other times it's like something simple can just actually make an improvement, right? So I would say, like, just pick something, start with something, and then see where that goes.
Cool. I wrote just start and kiss. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah. And specific. Kicks.
All right.
Keep it simple, stupid, and specific.
All right. Good. Mustafa, if people want to reach out to you, if they want to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
Yeah, just in the name of keeping it simple, stupid, just reach out to hello, it's just the word hello, at pushanalytics.com, and just put the name of the podcast and my name in the title, and you know, we'll they'll get to me, and we'll can book something.
Sounds good, man. Okay, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Awesome, thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.